Trofinco's Valor Program for veteran entrepreneurs is especially tailored to support veterans in transitioning to business ownership with dedicated financial solutions and resources. For traveling entrepreneurs, the program offers flexibility and support in funding, critical for those exploring new markets. Business owners will find the personalized approach and understanding of veteran needs invaluable for expanding operations or starting new ventures. Empower your entrepreneurial journey with the Valor Program and turn your business vision into reality. New U-Life Somaderm Gel. Travelers and business owners can benefit from enhanced energy levels and improved sleep quality. Crucial for adjusting to new time zones and maintaining peak performance during business operations. Entrepreneurs will appreciate the potential anti-aging effects, supporting a dynamic, youthful appearance vital for first impressions. Click here now to revitalize your body's natural rhythms and present your best self in every meeting and adventure.
Welcome to the Sales Platoon Podcast, where strategy meets storytelling, right at the crossroads of the battlefield and the business front. We'll bring you tactics, triumphs, and truths from the trenches of sales. Here's your host, John Rankin.
Welcome to the Sales Platoon Podcast, where strategy meets storytelling, and we're right at the crossroads of the battlefield and the business front. I'm your host, John Rankin, bringing you all the tactics and triumphs and truths from the trenches of sales and business. In today's episode, guys, we have something really special for you. We're going to be decoding the secrets of service to sales with our guest, Edward Molina. Is it Edward or Eddie?
Legally, it's actually Eddie.
Okay, Eddie Molina, who is actually a published author and has been in sales forever. I'm so excited to meet you, man. Everybody was recommending you to the show, which I'd never really heard of you before. So when I put that out in the tribe, everybody started tagging you. I was like, how have I not heard of this guy? So tell me a little bit about yourself and your service, and then we'll dig into your sales experience.
Yeah, just to pick up where we left off on the pre-call, which was, you know, I was in the reserve for 10 years. I deployed to Iraq in 2008-09. So my transition wasn't as traditional as someone going from, you know, many years active duty straight to civilian life in one day. So we were kind of accustomed to that training environment, back to civilian civilian world and back and forth. Yeah. So, you know, for me, it was a little bit different. I will say when we were deployed, transitioning back into normal life was the challenge.
Sure.
Because, you know, you just get used to everything, you know, and I remember saying to myself, man, I have to pay for chow and I have to pay for the gym. I got to pay for all these things. This is bullshit, you know?
Right. So what did you do in the reserves?
I started off as a combo guy and then I went artillery officer. And then I finished there.
All right. So you did 10 years there. What year did you start? And then you had your two deployments. What year did you finish?
Got in 99, did a few years there. I wasn't a very good guard soldier. And this was pre-9/11 days. So I missed a lot of drills. I was young. I was in my teens. You know, I didn't have that responsibility ingrained in me yet. And then after I got out, they let me go. And then I decided, you know, a couple of years later, around 2003, to go back in and do it right the second time. You know, I matured. And I think that's really an important topic when it comes to business and sales, is that maturity factor. And then from there, I did a total of 10 years. I got out in 2012.
So, you know, two deployments. That's, you know, that's
just one.
Oh, from 2000.
It was just one deployment.
2009.
Correct.
Okay. And that was Iraq or Afghanistan?
Correct. Yeah. Iraq.
Iraq. Yeah. All right. And what were you doing in the civilian part of your life during your time in the Guard or the reserves?
At the time, a majority of it, I was working in government in a law enforcement agency, and they were very friendly with us going to training, you know, and accommodating our schedules. So for us, it was a little bit easier. One of the things I've ran into in the Guard is that there were a lot of soldiers with employer issues. You know, even though the companies that they're working for are supposed to give them off, they don't make it easier, or they kind of resent that they have to do that flexibility thing. I did not have that problem, but I saw a lot of guys did. And I think for them, that was a difficult transition every month and every training cycle.
Okay. So you're in the Guard or Reserves because you started in the Reserves and then moved to the Guard, or you were Guard first and then Reserves?
Always in the Guard.
Always in a Guard. Okay. So when you were in the Guard, you're working in government work, law enforcement area. At what point did you either start your own business or start in sales?
Well, I was in sales before, while I was in the military the first time around. And that was part of the reason why I didn't do well with my National Guard as in my late teens, early 20s, because I was missing a lot of drills because of work. I was in sales at the time. And I did in total about 6 or 7 years in sales total. But I was always fascinated by it. I was always fascinated by the psychology of sales and, you know, how much work goes into it, which is why, you know, it's been an area of interest. Because even then I was reading books and immersing myself in the sales process, and I enjoyed it. The only challenge that people have in sales is that their employers are usually pretty aggressive with quotas, and that adds to the stress, and the stress kind of makes it even harder for them. And when it's harder, then they get their confidence is a low shot, and that impacts their sales skills. So it's kind of like a self-fulfilling prophecy, if you will.
All right. So at what point did you stop doing the government work and transition into business?
Oh, yes. That was the other part of your question. Just a few years ago, I left. Okay. Yeah, I left that and I started a small business doing home inspections, which is sales. You know, you're kind of people. You're trying to get these clients to jump on board. And as I was doing that, I was writing the leadership book. And then when I finished with that, I'm like, you know what? I know enough about sales. It was the same process with the leadership book. It's like, let me just throw what I know on paper, just kind of as a bucket list. So really it was only really right after COVID. That's when I jumped I left the government service and I jumped into small business.
Okay. So tell me a little bit about your leadership book. How did that come about? Like, and I know because of the Guard, that it's different because you're really living two lives, right? Your weekend life and your deployment life is different. But how do you go from working in the government, being a guardsman, to writing a book on leadership? And tell me about what it's about.
Yeah, great question. When I deployed, I deployed as a second lieutenant, you know, fresh butter bar out of OCS and training. So I made all the mistakes that new officers make, you know, the micromanagement, the following up, bothering people, like, you know, all the mistakes I was making. So I learned a ton while we were deployed. Luckily, it didn't cost anything, any big problems with my... So yeah, I learned a lot about leadership there. And then when I went back and got out of the Guard, or at least we went got home from the deployment, and I went back to government service, I saw a lot of the supervisors in that agency who just made... They went from lower line-level staff to supervisor. I saw them make that same transition, that making those same exact mistakes. And me, with my experience at the time, I'm like, how do you not know? Like, you know, you're making all these micromanagement mistakes. You're not trusting people. And then I saw that pattern. I'm like, wait a minute, that's pretty universal. So that's where I came up with the idea, you know, let me write the leadership book, because everything I learned in the military translate into pretty much anything, any type of leadership role in the civilian world.
Yeah, for sure. So talk about some of the key principles in the book. You know, I haven't read the book, right? So, and I'm always fascinated when I hear people's story of transitioning from military to civilian work. And I obviously, as a military guy too, believe that our leadership style, our true leadership style from the military is much better than anything I've seen in the civilian world. So talk to me about some of the principles and how you structured the book. And then what are you doing with the book?
Strangely enough, the book was just another bucket list thing. I had no intentions of really marketing it, because writing a book is easy. It's marketing it and staying on top of it and pushing it out as, you know, just like every other business, marketing is everything. So I never did any of that. So I published it out there, put it out there, and kind of let it roam free. So, but the way it's structured, it was kind of a mix between actual stories that I've been through, combined with like the actual lessons from that story. So I didn't want to just write like a recipe. You know, that's kind of boring. And it had to be more than just stories too. There had to be like a lesson behind it.
Sure.
So I structured it that, and a lot of it was ideal for beginners, like somebody who's new in a leadership position. And like it benefits them, because that was my experience going from enlisted to officer and overnight you're in charge of people. It was structured that way.
I love that you just did it as a bucket list, right? Like there's no real agenda other than this is what I want to do, and so I'm going to do it. So if you don't mind, how many have you sold without really the marketing plan?
About 150, give or take. Sometimes I'll get a trickle here and there. Majority of them were people I know and people they know. A couple departments actually bought a few in bulk, like four or five at a time. I don't keep track of that. It's just I know what the sales were.
Yeah.
But it's hard to make a living with writing unless you're at that peak pinnacle and that's all you do every day, all day.
Right. I know that you're doing like corporate trainings and stuff like that. Is the book like a giveaway offer? How did you structure the actual book itself as far as that part goes?
Well, I for anybody that was interested that I'm close to, I would give it to them for free. Like people that I know, business owners, like, hey, you can benefit from this. It didn't cost me much.
Right.
Maybe a few dollars. But that's really it. One of my goals is to do consulting part-time for leadership and sales. I haven't got there yet, but that's one of the things I want to continue doing, or at least get into this coming year. To kind of, I feel that's more light, easy work in terms of, you're just using your knowledge. But yeah, I plan on using those books as pillars or foundations of reference. Like, hey, you know, I'm not just saying I know what I'm doing, but here are some examples. And, you know, if I have a client, I'll be like, here's, you know, a copy of each book and read for yourself if I have what you're looking for. And once I dig into it, if you need what my service offers, because it has to work both ways.
Yeah. So on the sales piece, so you've written a sales book now as well.
Yeah.
Tell me about that one.
That one I had a lot more fun writing. That one I spit out in probably about a month and a half of like really concentrated every day, a few hours tops, because after 2 or 3 hours, you just get burnt. And I just had fun with it. I just broke it down into 9 pillars where they apply to every sales industry. It's just one pillar may apply to one industry and less to another. But all 9 of those pillars apply to every sales gig. And it's kind of like the leadership book where I could write an entire book on body language and how that rolls into the sales process.
Sure.
But it was really body language was just one of those 9 pillars. And then I went on to communication, went on to organization and so on.
Okay.
So it's broken down into those 9 individual pillars with some basic examples and a basic understanding of each one.
So what did you call your sales book?
The 9 pillars of sales. I forgot to put it update on my background behind me.
Not on your background. Your leadership one is.
Yeah.
Okay. And now, are these hardbacks or just ebooks? Or physical books or just ebooks?
Ebooks and paperback.
Ebooks and paperback. Okay.
Yeah, I had the option of doing a hardcover, but you know, I was more interested in just passing the information along than was trying to sell a nice quality physical book. You know, I personally like paperback because they're more nimble. They're easier to maneuver. You can jam it in your pocket. You know what I mean? It's
sure.
For me, it's not a collectible piece. It's more of a resource.
Yep.
So I intend for people to use it, especially with the sales book, because the sales book has a lot of empty spaces where, you know, I ask, hey, what are your thoughts? Or write down 3 XYZ, whatever it is, and I give you space. So for those books, it's kind of like a workbook in a sense.
Yeah. So you were doing home inspection, right? Which is a sales position. Home inspection is not just a sales position in that you have to find clients, but home inspection is really dependent upon you reaching out to mortgage brokers and real estate agents and developing really good referral partnerships. Talk to me about that journey with through the sales process, and how did you come to home inspection? Because that's not a sales career a lot of people know about.
I did a lot of research when I was transitioning from the government service into civilian. And I went through different franchises. I was looking at a couple of them, and then I was looking at other business models. I was even considering buying a business. I like the home inspection because it's something that you can expand from. You can start small. You get one client or one realtor, for example. Then you work on 2, And unless you make a huge mistake, once you have one in your pocket, then you add them, and then you just keep building on to it. And now there's two of us. We do them together, and we combine our companies, and so we work in tandem with each other. And that makes the process a lot easier and more lucrative as well.
Now, what state do you do this in?
New Jersey.
So it's cold. Yeah.
It is. Now is a dead time. I mean, like most states, it's not much going on up until, you know, March and starts to pick up. But not too many people are buying houses at this time of year, which is fine with me. I supplement my free time with writing projects that are unlimited.
Right. Yeah. So that's kind of the other thing about a commission only position, like, you know, doing the inspections, is that it's very cyclical and it's not a year long. So you really, during the peak months, you know, probably for you in New Jersey, you're looking at what you're doing from March until October.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. So you've got to make enough for the entire year in a shorter window than what most people do.
Yeah. And there are jobs that I turn down. Like I give them to partners, you know, whether it's too old of a house that I know is going to be a pain in the butt with paperwork, or it's too far, or I could tell the buyers are kind of a pain in the ass, I'll pass those off. So I'm not really trying to kill myself with these inspections. I just want to get enough to be comfortable. And then I still want to work in my writing too, because writing is more, for me, enjoyable. It's more of a passion, where I enjoy the home inspection. I enjoy the process, and I enjoy talking to people and helping them feel good and, you know, help them be comfortable with the process of buying a house and understanding what goes with it. So I do enjoy that part, but I don't want to kill myself with these, you know, crawling through crawl spaces multiple times a day, or, you know, through attic spaces. So I try to find that balance. And right now I have that.
Yeah. You know, one of the great things about being your own boss, right, is we get to fire clients. Yeah. Like, I don't want to work with you. I'm like, yeah, bro, I don't see this working out. Like, let's not do that to each other. And you can do
that. I've learned lessons. One of the first lessons I learned was, anyone who's price haggling, you're usually a problem on the back end too.
Yeah.
So if they're trying to bring you down, you know, trying to negotiate, then I say, you know, if it's fixed, try this person. They're a little cheaper, and they're just hunting for the cheapest deal, even though it's a flaw on their end, because they really have to look into the value they're getting, not so much what they're spending.
Yeah.
And that's a big part of the book too, is understanding that value.
So I do sales coaching, and, you know, I tell people all the time, I'm not a high pressure guy, because if I have to high pressure you into helping you make more money, I probably have to high pressure you to keep you in when you don't do what I'm asking you to do and not making more money. So it's just like, yeah. I don't want to babysit. So if I, yeah, got, you know, haggling with you, it's just like, hey, like, this is probably not going to work.
Yeah, and a case like that, I talk about that, excuse me, quite a bit in the book, where they're a client like that. If they're focused on the price, then that means you haven't built enough value for them to focus on what they're getting, you know. And that comes from the sales part of it. And one example I use, I'm like, it doesn't matter what you're buying, for example, but it doesn't matter if it costs 10 cents. If it has no value, it's worthless. But if it means the world to you, then it could be priceless. So, you know, it comes down to value and building that value, which is tricky, because, you know, you have a certain amount of time, expectations, rapport is a big one. Sometimes the chemistry is not right. And those are all part of the nine pillars that I talk about in the book. But one of them is building that value.
Yeah. Well, and even inside that, though, is the mindset, because the value proposition could be right. But if you don't have a mindset of growth, doesn't matter how much value I contribute to you. I just use this as a joke. It doesn't matter to me that Pittsburgh Steelers have won 6 Super Bowls. You can talk about their team and their tradition and their trajectory and their coaching excellence. I'm never going to be a Steelers fan. I can't stand them. Right. So you can build that institution all you want, but it's not going to be a match for me. Right. And sometimes we spend so much time building value in a sales process with somebody that's just clearly in their mindset not going to be a match.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think one of the other ones, I think all nine pillars are important and equally important, but I think they go up and down depending on the industry that you're in. But one of the ones I really harp on is rapport, because no matter what you're doing, everything becomes easier when you have good rapport. And if you have no rapport, everything becomes harder. So that's one that's an art form, because in order to build rapport, you kind of got to get away from what you're talking about and what you're selling and connect with them on a different level, but then you got to bring it back. So it is an art form going back and forth that way. And that's something I'm pretty good at, because I could talk about sports or anything all day, and then I know how to transition back to what we need to do and kind of dabble back and forth.
The other thing about rapport that makes it difficult is whether you have a long cycle or a short cycle sale and what the product cost is or the service cost, right? So you take, and I always find this strange. So you take real estate or mortgage, right? Probably the single most expensive decision anybody makes, $300,000, $400,000, $500,000, right? Unless you're buying businesses. But you look at what a mortgage officer or a real estate agent does. How much time do they spend building rapport?
It's unlimited. They
really don't do that much, right? It's a 30-day cycle, maybe a 45 if maybe there's some slight issues with the house, or you know, maybe there's a couple of outstanding credit issues. But you're in and out of that person's, you know, life in 30, 45 days. It's a $300,000-$500,000 decision, and there's next to no rapport building.
Yeah, and it's a step-by-step process. And I think that, you know, a realtor like that could suffer from a referral business. And I think that's the heart of any long-term sales success, is that referral network. Because I've seen in my time, and me included, where you go from one industry to the next because they work you to like a dog. If you don't hit your quotas, you're out, and they just kind of repeat that cycle. But if you have that strong network, that strong referral base, then that's how you can really settle down. And now they're starting to come to you.
Yeah. So you said that you wanted to get into consulting, and, you know, right now, as many people are transitioning out of the military, they're really getting offered $20-$25 an hour. Right. I mean, it's actually disgusting to me when you and I know as commission-based guys, that if you just have a little bit of grit and you're open to learning, you can go do sales and make $65-$75 pretty easily.
Yeah, it's not hard. Some are natural and some can learn it. I think there is no one clear-cut answer. But I think the problem is not so much the sales job. The problem is I see more often is the institution that's controlling that sales job, because they are putting the pressure on, they are asking you to do more work, and if you do well, the only thing they want you to do is do even better. So it's really hard, and I see a lot of companies cycle through that. They know they're going to get a young guy, they know they only have a year tops, maybe two, and then they could just continue that cycle, which is the reality of a lot of sales jobs, but it doesn't have to be. Some you know, are comfortable and lucrative, and you're not killing yourself with the hours. Like, you have to find that balance.
Right. Well, I think too, that's where we get into the division between a W-2 sales position, where you have a manager who, you know, checks in on your KPIs or your CSFs, who micromanages you because you're a W-2, versus a commission only role. There's nobody telling you, hey, you're not doing enough inspections, right? Like, you can do your own thing.
Root Brands Wellness's Zero In offers a competitive edge over other nootropics like Joe Rogan's Alpha Brain by focusing on natural gut health axis optimization, providing clearer cognitive function and sustained attention without artificial stimulants. Travelers will benefit from enhanced mental clarity during long journeys, while entrepreneurs and business owners can leverage improved focus for strategic planning and execution. Elevate your mental game beyond conventional limits and outperform your competition with Zero In today.
The second part of this is, when we look at it, this is one thing we did in the Army combatives program that I thought was really, really good. And I think it applies to sales, which is you have this graduated system of rewards and a graduated system of competition. And I think that in sales, the companies I've seen that do really well leave you alone, but incentivize you to continue to play the game. Right. So they're not these task drivers, more like, hey, Eddie, if you want to do well, we're going to give away a trip to Cancun this year.
Right.
You want to do that? You know, and that kind of graduated. We did that in combatives as well, where we had these stages where we were incentivizing people to do more, right?
Yeah.
Because at some point, that's all volunteer.
Yeah, and I think that's where the leadership ties into the sales. I do believe they're connected, because you could have great managers and great leaders in the organization that could help the salespeople, or it could be toxic where the opposite is happening. So yeah. I think the function of the success of sales also rides on the leadership that's in charge of it as well.
Right.
So I do believe that they are connected strongly.
Well, you know, just sales aside, just in business period, the number one reason people are leaving jobs is toxic leadership, period. Yeah. Like we live in a day now where if I got fired today or quit today, I can go on Indeed, I can go on LinkedIn, I can go on these platforms, and I could probably get a job fairly quickly, right? Especially right now with the depressed worker supply. You know, so this idea that I've got to go work for this slave driver, that worked in my dad's day. I don't see that really working out that much now. And I definitely don't see it in the remote world and with all the remote sales opportunities working in a sales force.
Yeah. And I know there's always going to be a need for salespeople, no matter what's going on, and especially in the harder times, because now they're more the good ones are even more valuable because they're fighting for something that's for less resources.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things I've learned early on. My first sales job, I'm not considering pumping gas because that's a New Jersey thing, but I used to try to upsell people for fun. Like, do you need an oil change or do you need a quart of oil? How about we do this? Just to kill time. So I don't consider that, but the first one was selling gym memberships.
Oh, and, nice.
And then they gave you like this 3-day crash course. Like, here's like the how do you enter in computer and here are the different types, and then it's good luck. Never any training after that. And then all you get are daily calls. It used to be 2:00 and 10:00. And what are your sales? And that was it. So there was no follow-on training. There was no rehearsing. There was no, it was just strictly about numbers, which eventually led to very unethical practices because there was no oversight. There was high pressure. And that's what, and I'm sure you've heard of, you look like you're my age. I'm sure you heard of Bally Total Fitness.
Yep.
It was that one. And they were probably as corrupt as a gym could get, and the reputation followed it. And so that was one of the other things. I'm like, we should be doing training. You know, we should be, you know, taking this downtime and going through these rehearsals, because, you know, in sales, you're going to see the same scenario repeat itself. It's just a matter of which one. Yeah. And it's
did you know that Patrick Bet-David worked at Bally's?
Did he really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. I'm surprised.
Just listening to his book, Your Next Five Moves. And so when he got out of I don't know if you know this or not, but he was at Fort Campbell, Kentucky. He was in the Army. He's Iranian, yes, and his parents immigrated to the United States to escape all that Wazoo stuff. And so then he got out and didn't know what he was going to do. So he was into bodybuilding. So his idea was, is if I worked at Bally's, I'd probably have a bigger opportunity to meet somebody who could help me with what I want to do. And then he started becoming really good at sales, and then he got promoted, and then they were going to promote him again, and the manager lied to him, so he quit. And that was all at Bally's. And then, then he started his insurance agency, and what he was doing there was going after minorities that were Spanish speakers and et cetera, to really kind of take what he was doing to the next level. Actually, it's a great book. You would love it.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out. I know he's got a lot of good stuff. I do listen to his podcast every once in a while. I do follow his, you know, watch his YouTube clips.
Yeah.
What's that book?
Yeah, he's got a really good one. It's How to Make $1 Million in a Year. And he basically just does KPIs, right? Like, so if your sale, like what's the average in New Jersey on a home inspection?
About 500.
500. So, you know, take $1 million, divide that down by 500. That's how many sales. Divide that by how many months. Divide that by how many days. Here's what you got to do to make $1 million in home inspection. So when he started doing that, he started realizing the quicker way for him to get to $1 million, instead of him selling all those policies, was to build a team, have those teams selling those policies. It's a fascinating video. His book's really good. And I just got to the section where he's really talking about being an entrepreneur versus an intrapreneur and what that looks like and how you can use that. And he is breaking down the statistics of people building business with inside of a business and how many of those are becoming millionaires.
Yeah, you know what? And I think, you know, you hit up on one important subject, which was in order to make real good money, because if you're working for yourself and by yourself, you only have so much time. The real money comes from having other people do part of it and taking part of it, but that's where the leadership comes in.
Yep.
And that's why that and sales are so tightly connected. And that's really the only way to expand is by having other people do the work for you.
You've got to consider the scalability issue. So let's dig into that for a second, because, you know, you're going to move into business consulting and sales consulting. How do you, and you could use it in either the home inspection business or in your consulting business. What's your plan to scale? Like, what's that look like for Eddie?
That's a good question. Let's talk, well, for consulting, that'd be tricky because I know that can be very lucrative, even as a one-man operation. I read a book, I think I have it, million dollar, I don't know if you can see it, $1 million consulting, Alan Weiss. He just does it by himself. He doesn't even have an assistant, but he charges ridiculous amounts. So he values his experience and knowledge. And that's what I think. I kind of liked his system in the sense that I just have to figure out, you know, how much knowledge I can provide and how much value I can provide, and then put a dollar amount to it and just to increase it. And as long as people want to continue paying for it, then keep charging.
So scalability, right? Maybe yes. In your business consultancy, you don't do that. Maybe that's the one man show. Have you really thought through scaling for the home inspection? What does that look like?
Yes, we are looking at how to do that. And in fact, my partner who's just talking to me, he does property management. So I kind of help him out with some of his stuff. So we're looking at working together a little bit more. We're just trying to figure out how. And my other partner that we do the home inspection stuff with, we're looking at how do we expand from there, because you can hire inspectors, you know, right out of getting licensed, which is a pain in the butt in New Jersey. But we're still on the front and early end of that, but we're open to the idea. But the way I have it structured now is the easier, more simpler inspections I'll do myself, and the other ones he'll do, but I'll do like some of the services that we call it, ancillary services that are in and out 5 minutes.
Right.
Because then I'm getting more bang for my buck and I'm not spending a lot of time on it.
Yeah. Whenever you get to that point where you have to start thinking about scale, measuring out the cost per hour versus what the task is, I always find comes almost right after that. You start looking at, you're paying me how much to do this? Do I really want to do this? I'd rather just pay somebody else to do this.
Yeah, and that's kind of where we have it right now, where he doesn't mind doing any inspection. I'm like, I'd rather, you know, I value my time a little bit more, because I do a lot of other stuff, but I like the going in and out, spending literally 5 minutes and earning a few hundred dollars.
Well, if you're making $500 for 5 minutes, that's a good day.
Yeah. Yeah. And there are situations like that. We're trying to tackle that. But as far as scaling it, we are definitely considering, you know, once we become busy enough. Right now, we're kind of working on marketing. What do we need to do once we get busy enough where we can justify getting another person and just taking a percentage of. And that's really standard for home inspection. You just take a chunk of theirs and they do the rest.
Yeah. Well, you could probably do, you know, 10%, right? So you just take $50 or whatever.
No, it'd be a lot more. It'd be more closer to like 40 or 50%.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because especially when you get licensed, the hard part is getting started. Because then, like I did that, I did the grind of going into realtor offices, giving, you know, some gifts and other little gifts, like ways to connect. So you got to grind, and that takes a good year, and you have to be good at it. Luckily, I did well with it. But some people can't afford that. They need to start working right away, so they'll get their license, and they'll look for a company that takes in inspectors, because you got to get your own insurance anyway, knowing that they're going to take a big hit per, but at least they're getting work.
Right. So somebody's listening to the show today. They're in the military. They're going to be transitioning in the next 3 to 6 months. What do you think the average home inspector makes, and why should somebody consider home inspection?
You know what? It's a great question, because the answer is not simple. You can do well at it right out of the gate, or you can struggle with it for years and barely get by. A lot of it has to do with the individual, their personality, and their drive. So it's really hard to gauge, you know, what your success rate. Now, if you are an employee, an inspector that, you know, work for a different company, that's a little bit easier to forecast, because they can tell you how many inspections to expect and how many they traditionally get. But if you're just going at it solo, then it can go in one direction or the complete opposite.
Well, only roughly 3% of people are going to launch out and start their own business anyway. Takes a pair of cojones and a little bit of grit to do that anyway. But by and large, if somebody goes out and starts doing home inspections, what can they reasonably expect their first year of business? What do you think?
First year of business, it also depends on the state. But I would say, like, livable money. The first year, as long as you're doing the basic stuff, like you're prospecting, you're visiting realtor offices, you're following up, you have a decent organizational skills, and you're not too lazy, like you're somewhat ambitious, you can make livable wage, you know, between $40,000 and $60,000 the first year, which is livable in most states.
Yeah.
And after that, as long as if you're good at it and you build your realtor base, then it'll just expand from there. Because realtors, once they find an inspector they're comfortable with, they don't want to go elsewhere, because then they'll be taking a huge chance.
Right.
So once you score yourself as a reliable guy, that's one in the books that you know you have, unless something drastic happens, and then you just keep building on top of that.
Okay. All right. Good. So yeah, where can somebody find your books? What's the website, and what's the best way to contact you? Is it Facebook, LinkedIn? Where can somebody find you?
My website, my personal website. I have my information there. The books are there. Excuse me. The other writing's there, and it's myname.com. So it's pretty easy to find. Instead of having to search through Facebook.
Okay.
Yeah, instead of having to search through Facebook or any of those other ones, myname.com. So that's the best way to dig into a little bit of the writing I do, as well as the books itself, as well as contact me as well.
Great. Well, we'll put that in the show notes for everybody. And if they've got questions about maybe being a home inspector, because I've had a couple of people come out of Sales Platoon, which is where we train them how to do sales, and one of our students is in Florida doing home inspection, and he's doing very well. He took the 3 months that we were in cohort and was building out his referral list before he ever started, before he lost his military paycheck. Great. And then just on the other side of being able to promote your books, you know, just go to eddiemolina.com and they can pick up your books or book you for a time to come in and speak.
Yeah, anything like that, and get a hold of me. I'm open to all ideas, collaborating, Zoom calls like this, picking my brain, and vice versa. Sometimes I pursue other people. I'm like, hey, I like what you're doing. I want to talk to you about it. Sure. Most times people do want to help out. I do want to mention that a friend of mine turned me on to, he runs I don't know if you're familiar with drop shipping.
Yeah.
He sells. Yeah, he started that a couple of years ago, and he told me about it over the spring. I'm like, wait a minute, you just put designs on shirts and sell it, and someone else handles the ship. So I got into that. And that's more of a passive thing, because there's not much you can do other than, you know, keep adding content. So I did start a website where I am selling military themed and law enforcement and first responder themed t-shirts. That's also available. I haven't linked that to my website because that's pretty brand new, but it is online at
Buy Hero Shop.
Not yet. Not yet. I got a little TikTok.
I'm telling you, I got TikTok shops are killing it.
Yeah. I'm resisting TikTok, but I know it's a critical piece to the whole puzzle. But I go off.
Especially military people. But I'm telling you, man, there's so much income there. And yeah, you know, their data scraping and stuff like that. But if you're doing something like t-shirt sales or any kind of product like that, you need to have a TikTok shop. That's just bottom line.
Yeah.
So I want to challenge you a little bit.
I will definitely grow into that, because, you know, I know I got the store open, and then now that I got it open, I can see the potential of how it can expand. And that's just one more avenue.
Who'd you go through with your store?
Well, I bought the domain buyherostuff.com, and then I just linked it to the Shopify store.
Oh, it's just using Shopify.
Right.
And Shopify comes up now has the potential to do all the fulfillment and the making of the t-shirt, and you don't have to. I didn't realize Shopify had gotten that good.
Yes. Yes, they did. I don't use Shopify. I've stuck to one vendor that's been fine that I've because they have a lot more options, but I also stuck to the traditional way because that's all the YouTube videos that were available at the time. So none of the YouTube videos explain that you can use Printify to fulfill an order. They all say you have to link it to a third party. So that's what I did. So I literally went step-by-step instructions from all these YouTube videos. And then by the time I learned it, I was like, wait a minute, Printify offers it themselves. Why am I going through all this trouble? But I'm used to it and I'm going to stick to it because the shirts that I got from that company and the delivery and everything, the tracking was all I was good with. So I was like, I'm comfortable with it. Everything seems to be working smooth. I didn't want to tinker with it. Not yet.
Not yet anyway. That's funny, man. Well, good. It's been great having you on the show. Thank you so much. Again, if you guys want to connect with him for consulting or for his books, or if you have questions about home inspection, it's just eddiemolina.com. And we'll talk to you soon, brother. Thanks so much for coming on.
Absolutely, brother. If you need anything, hit me up and I'll do the same and we'll stay in touch.
Great. Thanks.
Follow us on Instagram, LinkedIn, and YouTube at Sales Platoon for more updates and veteran success stories. Join us next time as we continue to decode the art of selling through the unique perspectives of those who've served.